This is 89.3 KPCC Pasadena, 89.1 KUOR Redlands, 90.3 KVLA Coachella, and 89.5 KJAI Ojai. Good morning, everyone. This is Air Talk. I'm Kyle Stokes in for Larry Mantle. Coming up next hour at 11 a.m., a conversation about immigrant entrepreneurship. California immigrants are actually more likely to become entrepreneurs than people who were born here. If you're new to this country, you opened a business, we want to hear from you. We'll take your calls next hour, and you can weigh in right now on the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. But first, a broad-ranging conversation about the Los Angeles Unified School District. The nation's second-largest school district is at a crossroads. We all remember January when LA Unified teachers went on strike, and they roused widespread public support. The deal that ended the strike seemed to raise hopes of a new day in LAUSD. 2 weeks ago, a proposed tax increase to help fund it all, Measure EE, went down to defeat in a special election. On the day after the vote, LA Mayor Eric Garcetti took the podium at a press conference, and let me read you some of what he said. "I'm worried about our children," he said. "When fall comes, class size will come down by a student or two. But in a year or two, that progress stops. None of us can pat ourselves on the back when there's only 36 students in a math class and not 38, closed quote. The stakes are high here. Almost 600,000 kids attend public schools in LA, a projected 470,000 in LAUSD-run schools, another 120,000 in charter schools. Most of those kids qualify as low income. Almost a quarter are still learning English. And I've also heard from a lot of teachers that the defeat from Measure EE was a real emotional gut punch for them. It makes them question where things go from here. So that's the question we want to raise this hour. A broad-ranging conversation about the district in light of Measure EE's failure. And to start that conversation, I want to put the question to you, AirTalk listeners. Why do you think that Measure EE did not pass? Give us a call, 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. And not only why did it not pass, how do you think LAUSD should move forward from the defeat of that tax measure? Especially would love to hear if you're a parent in LAUSD, if you're a teacher in LAUSD, if you're a student in the system, you're out on summer break and you might be happening to catch us, I want to hear from you. And I hope that we can keep this conversation future-centric, but also keep in mind that there are some challenges raised by the failure of Measure EE. Joining us to discuss it all is Jackie Goldberg, an LAUSD school board member. She represents District 5, which represents parts of Northeast and Southeast LA. Ms. Goldberg, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be with you.
Also joining us is Alberto Ratana, the president and CEO of Community Coalition, a nonprofit organization that helps transform the social and economic conditions in South LA. Alberto, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it.
And on the line with us as well is Katie Browdy, the co-founder and CEO of Speak Up, an organization founded by LAUSD parents who would like to change the dynamics of education policy and improve public education in California. Ms. Browdy, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you, Kyle. I'm glad to be here.
And again, I want to throw the question out to AirTalk listeners, to parents, students, teachers in LAUSD. Where do you think that LAUSD should go from here, especially in light of the fact that Measure EE did not pass and at the polls? And where? How should LAUSD change in the future, perhaps? And I think we should start with that question and throw it out here to this panel that we have with us already. Why do you think Measure EE failed? I'll put that question to each of you, but let's start with Jackie Goldberg.
Well, I think EE failed for a number of reasons. First of all, it was clear that in many places we had too many special elections, and so voter turnout, which needs to be higher than average in a special election to pass a two-thirds vote, probably wouldn't get enough people even to go to the polls. The second problem was that there was all of this wrangling. What did it mean? Did it include your garage? Did it include the property? So people became confused. But probably the biggest reason it failed, besides the fact that people have a hard time voting to tax themselves, and that's always been true, is that we had a lot of lies sent out. I'm a senior citizen. I received three pieces from Jarvis and from the L.A. Chamber telling me that I would be hurt by Proposition EE when, in fact, I would be exempt from Measure EE. So there were a lot of lies. People were told that it would cost them thousands of dollars, whereas the average was probably about, $100 a month. That would be $1,200. I'm talking about $25 a month. So in fact of the matter, I think there were a lot of problems with doing a special election in a short period of time in that particular time frame. But also there's been the underlying current, always, by the right wing, that somehow or another LA Unified is a massively mismanaged district and to give it money was a bad idea under any circumstances. Which, of course, is what you say when you do not wish to have any taxes on the wealth of this state, and that's a big problem. We have to tax the wealth of this state.
Interesting. So there was some confusion. There was what you, Ms. Goldberg, would call misinformation, as well as the idea that people mistrust that the money would be managed fairly, which you don't feel is a fair thing to accuse the district of. Let me put the same question to Alberto Ritana of Community Coalition. Why do you think Measure EE failed?
Well, I think overall it was an election that most people didn't even know was taking place. So not only is the low voter turnout a reflection of that, but just the general lack of awareness that this was taking place. In fact, one of the more meaningful elections that took place was in Council District 12, which tends to be LA's most conservative.
The only district that, up until recently, the only district that had been represented by a Republican.
Exactly. But the voters there still represent our region's most conservative votes. It's also the area that turned out the most votes for this election. And so I think overall, people's lack of awareness around the election was a very big reason. And I would agree with the school board member that there is a lot of underlying sort of myths about what's real and what's not with LAUSD that has been in the pipeline for the last 40 years. So I think that there's a larger narrative here that we need to upend, which is that, you know, since the 70s, we have not been putting our resources in, and now California, it ranks 41st in the country when it comes to spending for our kids, and we're surprised that we haven't achieved the levels of academic success that we want to see.
Katie Browdy, CEO and co-founder of Speak Up, why do you think that Measure EE failed?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that haven't been mentioned yet that are important. First of all, I think that we have to acknowledge what was really said here. This wasn't an election where the measure went down because of some draconian requirement of a two-thirds majority to pass a tax measure. We couldn't even get close to a simple majority to pass this. So, and I think the other thing we need to acknowledge is that it wasn't just the wealthy voters that rejected it. It was also roundly rejected in some of the neighborhoods with low-income renters in the Latino districts who are frankly tired of being living in the districts where their schools are just not serving their kids. So I think the district does have to take some responsibility for this. I think we also have to acknowledge that this is a system that has not been serving all of our children well. And voters want to know that money is going to be used well. They want some transparency about how it's going to be spent. They want to know that that they will get some results from putting some money into a district that they believe is not working well for their kids. So I think we're talking about something that needs massive infusions of cash to make a real difference. And we need to be thinking about how we message that to voters so that when we go to Sacramento, when we ask voters to pass a ballot initiative in 2020 statewide, that they feel they're going to see some results from the money that goes into the public school system.
I want to hear your thoughts, AirTalk listeners, as well. Give us a call, 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. We want to have a broad-ranging conversation about where LAUSD goes from here. But all three of our panelists here have mentioned this idea of, you know, whether it's a myth or whether you believe it's a fact that the district has mismanaged. Its money is not a good steward of the dollars that would have been generated by this tax measure. If you disagree with that notion, where do you think that myth comes from? If you agree to it, maybe you can tell us why. Give us a call at 866-893-5722. I want to take a listener call right now from Jennifer in Southgate. Jennifer, you're on Air Talk.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say that as a parent and as a property owner, I believe that the measure failed because, number one, transparency with LAUSD has been horrible. Let's be honest. You go to a campus in LAUSD in South LA or Southgate, the things you see, you will not see in other areas of the city. And management at LAUSD has not been right. I went to school with employees of LAUSD who also attested to this, who also said that LAUSD was mismanaging money and that management at LAUSD was very heavy and they were not providing teachers with the resources they need. And more importantly, they were not providing the students with the resources that they need. My son goes to school, he goes to a charter school. Why? Because I feel that the school, the public school that is assigned to my area does not provide the correct education for my son to succeed in this country. And so we have to go and look outward to provide a adequate education for our children. And again, that transparency is missing from LAUSD. And also, I agree that a lot of us did not know about this measure, to vote for this measure. A lot of us didn't know. I was unaware of it until probably a day or two before we were supposed to vote for it. So in my opinion, I don't think it's a myth that LAUSD is not managing money correctly. I think it's a fact.
Well, so let me put that question to Jennifer in Southgate. Thank you so much for calling. Southgate is an area represented by LAUSD school board member Jackie Goldberg, and she's with us on the line. Jackie, I'm wondering if you can respond to that. I mean, what part of this does LAUSD need to own? Is there something that LAUSD needs to own about this idea that management of money has been not good in the past?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think transparency is an issue. I don't think mismanagement is. Transparency is an issue because I believe that the superintendent coming from the private sector is not yet used to doing things in public, and we're working on that with him, and I think he's responding. The budget that we passed last night is almost useless for anyone to know what's going on in the district, including policymakers, and I plan to make big changes in that. But that's not the same as mismanagement. The idea that there's mismanagement comes from this continuing notion that somehow or another LAUSD is spending more money than it is taking in. And yet, since 2010-11, the ending balances in the district have never been negative except for one year, and that was during the Great Recession, and that was 2012-13. And that year, there was a $5.7 million in the red. Other than that, since 2010-11, the district has been in the black at the end of every year. So there is no mismanagement of the money. Why does it look like there's mismanagement? Is because of a requirement that came in with Governor Pete Wilson. He said that school districts had to predict what they're going to get 2 years out based on a formula that the state government would give it, which is just a cost of living increase estimation, and not based on what the economy is actually doing or what tax revenues coming into the state are doing. And so what happens is that every time a district, including LA, does a budget, they have to go 3 years out and predict what will happen, given assumptions that are not accurate, but are assumptions that are required by the state for us to use. And so that looks like every 3 year of a budget, 2 years later, we're going to be in the red. And yet that only happened once in the last 10 years. And that was a very small amount, and that was due to a great recession that we were in.
We're going to pick up with that thought when we come back after a quick break here on Air Talk. I want to put it out again to listeners that we're having a conversation about the future of LAUSD, particularly in the light of the failure of Measure EE, the proposed parcel tax, to generate revenues for the district. You can give us a call. Tell us where you think LAUSD should be going from here. What do you need to see from the district going forward? Perhaps academic programs that you think the district should be offering in order to make itself attractive and as attractive as possible. 866-893-KPCC is the number to call, or you can go to kpcc.org/airtalk and leave a comment. We might be able to read it on the air. Back after a one-minute break here on 89.3 KPCC. We're having a conversation about the future of the LA Unified School District. Where does the district go from here after the parcel tax to fund LAUSD went down to defeat in a special election 2 weeks ago? What kinds of programs should the district be offering? What kinds of changes should the district be making, if any, in order to move forward from that? Just before the break, we were talking with LAUSD school board member Jackie Goldberg about the perception in her view that there is mismanagement of money, that she sort of detailed ways in which she felt that it's provable that the money was not misspent. I'm curious to throw that to two of our other guests that we have here on the panel on Air Talk today. One is Alberto Ratana, the president and CEO of Community Coalition, which has advocated for the district to be spending more money directly to the schools that are serving the highest need population. Beyond something as abstract as how big the deficit is or is not, and we can actually talk about that, put a pin in that conversation and pick it up later. But I'm wondering, Alberto, is there something that people on the ground who are sending their kids to schools in areas that you would argue did not in the past get as much money devoted to equity purposes, do you think that that might be part of what they feel is like, we don't feel like the district has been paying enough attention to the schools? Is that a factor here?
You know, look, I think yes, but I just want to take a step back to just remind our listeners that over the past 40 years, we've plunged in spending from number 7 in the country to 41st. We're spending $10,000 a year per student in California, and $10,000 a year is just not going to cut it in 2019. To the earlier point about mismanagement, look, LAUSD could do a much better job on how it allocates its funding. We sued the district because we felt that South Los Angeles and East Los Angeles was being shortchanged by some of the decisions they were making. Those are really important practical interventions that need to happen to move more money to schools and communities that should be first in line because they've been at the back of the line for so many years. That's what equity is about. So the district should absolutely do a better job of making sure that the money it has now should be far more aggressive in targeting those dollars to the communities that need it most. That's for certain. But that should not be a proxy for not spending more money. We have to, as a state and as a community, invest more in our children. That's why we're working on Schools and Communities First, which is a ballot measure that's going to be on the ballot next year to pump $11 billion back into our schools and communities that will help right size what has been essentially over $500 billion that has not been going to our schools for the last 40 years. That's a huge, huge problem. So we need more money, yes. Two, we need to target that money better so that the communities that our listener called in and talked about actually have the resources to provide the education that our kids deserve. And to the point that was made earlier on voting, look, I just want to be very clear that one, you're right. We did not get 66% of the vote. But actually, in our communities in South and East, where voter turnout was lower, that's where we had the most support regionally for this measure. So it begs the question, what is it about parts of the Valley and parts of the high voter turnout that is rejecting supporting a school district that is 90% people of color? We have to have a real conversation about race and equity in the city and as a region, especially in a time where President Trump has put down the law around an epic battle. Are we going to say government is bad? Government is only good we're going to invest in Border Patrol, militarization, and police, and government is bad when it comes to supporting social services, education, and programs that support our kids. LA, we have an opportunity to draw a different line and say, look, this is a different region, a different community that's going to invest in our kids and invest in public, in the public good, and fight to make the public good serve our needs.
So two different conversations there about the idea that, you know, LAUSD, it's possible, could spend the money that it has more equitably, but the district also has to take a stand and step up and look for more funding. I want to ask Katie Browdy of Speak Up, the CEO and co-founder of that organization. Your organization in the past has been really critical of how the district has managed its money, but as Jackie Goldberg, the school board member who's on with us as well, made the point earlier, the district has actually been able to maintain reserves over the last few years. They've projected deficits a few years in the future. Those deficits haven't materialized. And I'm wondering if you're on board with the coalition to try and get more money to LAUSD, maybe the way to make that case is to make less light of these deficit projections, which have not to date come true, and maybe focus on the fact that the district has been managing its money enough so that it does avoid those deficits and has, at least in recent years.
Well, I think that really Alberto's point about the low level of spending overall is really the main point here. The district does always seem to find some money in pockets and holes, but I don't think that we can ignore the fact that the county has had fiscal experts brought in to require the school district to figure out how it's going to pay its bills over the next 3 years. The problem, I think, is that the voters, the public, the families in the school district want to see results. They want to know that the money that is being spent equitably so that the resources are going to the schools, as Alberto pointed out, where the kids need these resources the most. We need to have the most effective teachers teaching in the highest needs areas. And the only way we're really going to make those kinds of significant changes in the district is with a massive infusion of more money. We're totally behind the Schools and Communities First initiative. And we also think that Sacramento should be, the legislature should be addressing this. What if we were to make some really bold changes like that demonstrate how much the public respects and values the teaching profession? What if we were to be able to pay our teachers starting salary of $80,000-$85,000 a year instead of $53,000? What if we were to subsidize their education? What if we were to model that teacher preparation system on some of the most successful systems that turn out the most effective teachers, and then make sure that we're rewarding the teachers who are willing to teach in the toughest subjects in the toughest areas in the way that they deserve to be? That's going to take some real infusions, but it could also be accomplished in part by reallocating the resources that we have now. So we have to acknowledge that we have these huge liabilities, unfunded liabilities in healthcare benefits and in the pension system. And we also have to acknowledge that we are not putting enough money into this system to really make the kind of changes that have been detrimental to the same kids for decades.
I want to read a couple of listener comments that have written in on the Air Talk page as well as called in. Jeffrey on the page writes, I'm a homeowner whose children went through LAUSD schools, and I voted for Measure EE reluctantly. I consider myself a left progressive, but understand that many citizens feel overwhelmed by recent tax and bond and other measures that have failed to deliver on their promises. Ultimately, the solution to education funding cannot be at the local level. Emma in Los Feliz Avilas wrote in with a similar comment. We have a kid in middle school who live in a wealthy area. My husband and I didn't show up to vote for Measure EE because we don't think people should be taxed. We think companies should be taxed. The parcel tax was a lot of money for a lot of people. Daniel in Van Nuys writes, I wonder if it's possible to streamline information on the ballot. The wording is often confusing and people don't want to make the effort to figure out what it means. As soon as Measure EE said raising taxes, I stopped reading. I live in an apartment too. I'm a renter, so it didn't necessarily apply to me. Let me take a call quickly. It's Stephanie in Sherman Oaks. Stephanie, you're on Air Talk.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, what's your comment?
Well, I think if we put back Measure 37 in our budget, we would get the money that we need for the school district, and that's why people aren't voting for it, because the government is not doing what we are expecting.
Jackie Goldberg, LAUSD school board member, veteran of state politics and of the school board, can you talk about Measure 37?
I'm not sure what Measure 37 she's referring to.
Stephanie, which Measure 37 are we referring to here?
And they said that 55% of the lottery would go to prizes, 10% would go to expenses, and 34% would go to the school district.
Okay.
And Mayor...
Stephanie, thank you for the call. Now, we've done some reporting on this. A fellow reporter of mine has shown that a lot of the lottery revenue has gone up, but that the money for schools has not kept pace with the increase in lottery revenue. Is that what you're referring to?
Out of the school district. Out of the school district's budget. They took that much money out of the school district's budget.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate your call. Let's go to another call. We have Carlos in Malibu. Carlos, you're on Air Talk.
Hi, how you doing? I work for the district, and basically the waste that I see a lot of waste in transportation. I mean, talking about carrying five kids in a huge bus and five kids, one big bus. That's a lot of gas waste. Also, waste in food. Not yet.
Oh, Carlos, sounds like we're losing you. Thanks very much for calling in. Let's go to another call. It's Marcelina in Eagle Rock. Marcelina, go ahead. You're on Air Talk.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an educator. My parents were educators in the district. My kids attend LA Unified Schools, and I myself am a graduate. So we've been in the system for a very long time. And one of the areas that I've seen that is a problem is that every few years we're state mandated to adopt a new textbook program for each subject area. So it comes out to every 2 years, we're having to be retrained. We're having to purchase new books, dispose of the other books or the other materials that we had before. And I feel that it's not necessary to adopt a new program every 8 years. And the publishing houses don't really change much. And I believe that that's a big waste if we could try to keep the resources that we have and not have to change our textbook program every 8 years, I think that we could save a lot of time and resources, because I spent a lot of time in training and it's kind of the same thing over and over
right.
again.
Marcelina, thank you so much for your call. Jackie Goldberg, I want to put that question to you, I think, because the reason is that the teachers union often would make light of the fact that the district might have been padding its budget. And just briefly, they always point to the books and supplies line. Is this a reason why? Is that a reason why the district has to budget for so much? They never end up spending as much in books and supplies as they budget.
I think books and supplies is a place where departments, let's say, let's just take example adult ed, or let's take elementary ed. Those monies are set aside partly as a reserve against uncertainties in their area. So it is a little bit of a holding place. But part of the problem is that people don't realize that Proposition 13 not only destroyed the finances of the state by taking the wealthiest commercial property and taking it out of the ability to be used really for public good, whether it's housing or health care or schools, but in addition to which, it did two other things. It turned local school districts into agents of the state rather than having really local control any longer. So school districts, people think that school boards have a lot of power. Actually, they have very much less power than they did before Proposition 13. Before Proposition 13, they could decide whether or not we needed to have more money in our particular district and could put things on the ballot. Now, and also it added a two-thirds vote. So here's the problem that we have continuously, which is now the state decides that there will be a textbook fund and that you can only get new textbooks by using the adopted textbooks, using state money. Otherwise, you have to use general fund money.
Right.
What happens is that you have a push and a pull. You've got parents and you've got teachers and you've got people in the community saying, are you kidding me? This book is 8 years old. Why aren't you getting us the newest book? So we say, okay, well, okay, the state is going to pay for it. All right, we'll buy the new books.
I'm going to have to put you on hold there for just a second as we've got to take a quick break, Ms. Goldberg. I'm sorry about that. We will be back, though, to continue this conversation with our panel about the future of LAUSD. And when we come back, I want to continue a conversation and focus on how the district might change academically going forward. But first, we're going to take a quick news break with Julie Slater. Julie. We're having a broad-ranging conversation about the future of the Los Angeles Unified School District on Air Talk. I'm Kyle Stokes in for Larry Mantle all this week. We heard during this conversation from David in Westwood, who says Proposition 13 needs to be repealed. People in California don't have the guts to do the right thing. It's selfish. They're taking away money from the future of kids. Until we repeal Prop 13, everything else is half measures. Serena in Silver Lake wrote in to say that she was bothered by some of our earlier conversations about mismanagement. I live right next to the LAUSD schools where my 10-year-old goes. There's thousands of dollars in books that's just sitting there. We have to raise $500,000 as parents to support the school's arts program, gym, and other expenses. With me to discuss the future of LAUSD is Jackie Goldberg, a member of the LAUSD School Board, Katie Browdy of Speak Up, and Alberto Ritana, the president and CEO of Community Coalition in South LA. I want to ask if anyone out there, Air Talk listeners, parents, students, teachers especially, where do you think LAUSD should make changes to the academic side of its operations? I want to talk about that for the next 20 minutes or so. Give us a call at 866-893-KPCC. What kinds of programs do you like that LAUSD offers that it should be offering more? What programs might not be working in your view? What are a successful instructional and academic strategy to move this district forward? Give us a call and let us know. 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722 or the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Let's start just for a second because we have such a foothold on this issue because of the strike, and that's class sizes. It was such a big selling point during the strike. Alberto Ritana of the Community Coalition, I'm wondering if you can weigh in here. Do people, obviously people want class sizes that are smaller, but was that a stand-in for improved instructional services generally? Or should class sizes specifically be a focus for the district moving forward? Or is it just, did people just want generally better classroom instruction and that was the closest thing that people could understand from the public discussion of the strike?
I mean, I think we want both. We want smaller class sizes and better instruction. That's certainly what our youth and our parents tell us at Community Coalition all the time. And so I think it was a really important step forward. And I really appreciate sort of a little bit of the pivot and a lot of the listeners' comments around Prop 13. I just have to agree that at the end of the day, the state does have to shift its priorities. And what's great about schools and communities first is that it will place the responsibility of paying for our kids on corporations and commercial properties, not residential homeowners, which I think was one of the biggest challenges with Measure EE. Folks are having a hard time in this economy, and folks are just thinking about, how am I going to pay for this? Why is this coming on my back? While I do believe we all have to pay into the system, at the end of the day, I think that the work at the state level around Prop 13 reform is really important. And the reason why I think it's important is that we have to also pivot away from this conversation of deficits and mismanagement and start talking about how it is that we're going to create inputs and surpluses of support for our kids, especially in communities that have a history of divestment. It's no surprise, and this is sort of to pivot back to your point, Kyle, but it's no surprise that Prop 13 passes as the state begins to go through a demographic change. So the majority now of our state are people of color. The majority of our schools in LA are now people of color, vast majority of people of color. It is ironic to me in some ways that as the shifting population has become more brown, more black, more Asian, the resources have gone down. And we have, as a state, need to have an honest conversation about how progressive California is really going to be. What do our kids want? What do our parents want? At the end of the day, it's pretty simple. Our kids, a lot of the parents and kids that we talk to, they just want a shot, especially they want a shot to go to college. They really do. And I know that a lot of folks might get concerned about, are we preparing people all for college or not? At the end of the day, that's what our kids want. Our parents want our kids to have a shot at a middle-class career, a shot at college, a shot at improving resources in South Central. And the only way that a lot of times people see that is through a quality education. Now, there's more that needs to happen, but there's absolutely no way we can create the academic program for our kids without the investment.
Now, just because I made that hard pivot from finances to academics, Alberto, people might hear that comment and think, well, the issue really is, yeah, everybody wants better instruction, but you can't have better instruction without better funding. Is that a fair summary?
But the middle-class parents at these schools can afford, like myself, to provide my kid with the speech therapy that they might need, the extra services they might need. I might have the health care that our kid needs to access the kind of services. Well, a lot of low-income parents don't have that, so we have to really support that.
Katie Browdy of Speak Up, where does the district need to go from an instructional strategy perspective? Is it to continue this focus that's been baked into the next three-year contract on class sizes? Is it both and with something else? What is that something else? Where does the district go instructionally?
Well, I don't think that anybody would argue that class sizes of 39 are beneficial for instruction. It's kind of a given. Class size reduction is important, but it's not going to solve all the problems if the instruction in those classrooms is not highly effective. So I think one of the places the district can start is by looking at the places that we do have success. Where are kids getting an education in the communities where there are a lot of failing schools? What are these schools doing to prepare kids? Some of these, we see some real successes, for example, in the dual language program. Mm. We should be looking at those benefits are not just because the kids are learning two languages. There's a lot of research, for example, that shows how that affects their learning in all areas of instruction, and that it has some kind of a significant impact on their ability on their cognitive abilities and so on going forward throughout life. So things like that really should be replicated. Why aren't we doing more to replicate the programs that are actually working? And just naming something a dual language program, just keeping on that same theme, isn't necessarily the answer. Just as sticking the name Magnet on a school isn't going to suddenly change the way things happen. It has to be a real intentional approach to changing the instructional method and the way families and students are treated in those schools, the way we empower our teachers inside those buildings. All these things need to be looked at in the context of where the successes are. I'd like to see the district start there first.
I want to hear your thoughts as well, AirTalk listeners, about how the district can move forward instructionally after the failure of Measure EE. Where does the district go from here? That's our topic for the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left to discuss it. We'll come back after a short break, but first give us your call at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5255. 5722 or the AirTalk page. How should LAUSD change how it handles instruction? Back after a 1 minute break. We're having a conversation about the future of the LA Unified School District here on AirTalk on 89.3 KPCC. Want to know where the district should be going from here. Frank in West Covina had wrote in to say that he's a maintenance worker in LAUSD and says the district needs more discipline in the classroom. I go in and I look at things and it's out of control. And I would have never given the teachers a raise until they could get their students under control. I want to take a call now from a listener in Carson. Rosie, you're on Air Talk.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. So I just wanted to make a comment. I have five boys. We've done the private sector and the public sector. And I can tell you that one of the main differences is the parent involvement. Unfortunately, we can throw money at the system and expect them to do what it is, some of the portion of what the parents should be doing, but that's not going to work. I know that in the LAUSD system, they have meetings during the day. Well, I work now, so it makes it very difficult for me to meet those meetings that involve any kind of workshop or training. So they should move those down to an hour where parents can actually make these meetings.
Alberto Ritana of the Community Coalition, I'm curious to know how you think the district is doing on parent engagement.
I mean, I think the district has taken steps, but at the end of the day, in my opinion, I think the parent involvement and parent power ultimately resides in the parents themselves. We have to be willing to organize and get ourselves together and put pressure on the district. The pressures of the economy have made it very difficult. Parents are working two jobs. I mean, I'm a coach of my son's Little League, and it's hard to get kids out to practice just because parents are working two jobs. So, I mean, the district has got to think creatively about how to create space for parent input and parent voice and parent engagement to support our kids at the end of the day. So I think that that's an important point. It's something that I continue to strive for and to continue to think about our parents, not just as volunteers, but actually as voices for change, because they're ultimately going to advocate for kids in a way that is in their best interest. And I think that that's oftentimes missing. And again, you know, I just have to say that, no, it's not enough to throw money, but we're only spending $10,000 a year on our students. We're willing to spend $40,000 to incarcerate them. There's got to be something different in the way that we spend for our children, because, yes, we have to change the system. We have to make sure that they're getting the adequate support, to add the best teachers, the best support programs. But that can't happen without investing in them. And hopefully I'm thinking that in the next year and in the years to come, we not only change the anatomy of a school in terms of how instruction is done, but more importantly also we change our values and put money where our mouth is to support our kids.
Rosie, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Raquel in Maywood. Raquel, you're on Air Talk.
I think a missing point is a parent point. There's lots of negotiation going on between the district, among teachers. The teachers have their union, principals have their associations, in district as well. Where is the point of the parent? The negotiations go on and agreed upon, but where is the point of the parent? It's very sad that Measure EE didn't follow through, but we were well-informed whatever was out there. But yet, where is the negotiation? I would have loved to be on the table and said my point of view of how. Mismanagement, money, I disagree. And they continue to open positions up in the district, but what happens till we get the crumbs down here? I'm an active parent. I have two students that assist in the city of Maywood, and it's luckily we're okay, but where is the rest of the, we're not all in the same page. So I think there's a disconnecting between the districts, the logo, and down to the bottom, which is the most important, our children are being disconnected from it.
Raquel, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Jackie Goldberg, a quick question for you from Sable in Silver Lake, who teaches at a private Waldorf school, has always been a strong believer in Waldorf education, where there are no textbooks, where students can create their own textbooks. She says it saves costs, helps students learn in hands-on creative ways. Would LAUSD ever be able to implement any tactics like that?
Yes, actually, that's true. We are discussing right now with a Waldorf school about having it become a district-aligned charter for the first start, and then eventually to be able to use some of those things to make it possible through our magnet schools as well, or maybe even make it a possibility of schools to choose to do something like that, which don't have to be either a magnet school. We have a new category called Schools of Choice. A good example of that is the STEAM Academy. That's science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, that's what STEAM stands for. The STEAM team from Legacy High School down in Southgate just won an international first prize in Prague, Czechoslovakia, for their first place use of hydrogen cell fuel in running a car that they created that ran for 50 miles before it ran out of juice with the hydrogen cell that they created. We have a lot of wonderful things happening in the district. Our goal must be to expand them. I agree with the previous speakers in saying that where things are working, we should replicate them. Absolutely. We have expanded dramatically dual language programs. We are planning now to expand into pre-K dual language. We have more dual language programs than any other district per capita in the state right now. And it is a growing number of schools that wish to be involved with dual language. We need to put back music and art into the classrooms because, first of all, some of those things are the things that keep children engaged and excited about school. And secondly, we know there's a direct relationship between music, particularly instrumental music and choral music instruction, and learning mathematics, because after all, if you play any instrument, you know that there are eighth notes and sixteenth notes and dotted eighths, and what does that
There's mean? Arithmetic there.
There you go. Not just arithmetic, but fractions, my God.
You know, just to we're running out of time in the conversation. I just want to interject a question for you, Ms. Goldberg, which is that, you know, there are places that want to start these themed programs, dual language programs, magnet programs. But a lot of times this comes down to board approval, board support, whether the school that wants to make this transformation can have the resources. And sometimes there isn't the board resources. There isn't the board support to make these things go through. Is there a role for the district to be more proactive in allowing these transitions to take place in communities that want to make these changes?
When I was on the board the first time in the 1980s, when we had massive overcrowding and multi-track year-round schools and all of that terrible, terrible time, one of the things that we did right then that I want to do again now that I'm back here is to push decision-making down to the local school level. We had something called LEARN, which was a private sector funding of training of parents, teachers, classified personnel, and the community to be jointly running their school, running their budget, their calendar, running their school. Unfortunately, after I left the board and after the superintendent who supported this, and we had LEARN in about 30% of our schools, it wasn't required. You had to volunteer. Your school had to agree it wanted to be trained. But once you got the training on how to work together, you could really develop any plan you wanted. I want to go back to that. We have a lot of talented people at schools. They shouldn't have to wait for downtown to decide whether they should change their instructional program. And so that's something I'm very, very pushing on, even though I've just got here again, is to be saying to people, if you've got all these people that have all these university training, you've got all these parents who know their children better than anybody else does, if you've got all these classified people who know how to make that campus work, then you need to put them all together and let them decide how best to meet the instructional needs of the students. However, I will go back to what both of your previous speakers have said, which is we don't have enough money. We don't have enough money. And you know how we know we don't have enough money? Because class sizes are so humongous. You know, we keep...
And that is a last word. That is a last word on this, that it does come back to funding. I'm sorry we're running out of time, and I just want to make sure I have enough time to thank all of the guests. Jackie Goldberg, LAUSD School Board Member for Board District 5, Katie Browdy of Speak Up, and Alberto Ritana, the President and CEO of Community Coalition. I want to thank all of you for coming in and indulging a very broad conversation about the future of the Los Angeles Unified School District. I really appreciate your time and the time of everyone who took the time to write and call in here to AirTalk. We have more coming up after a quick break.